Laborers in the office. Those in the office who have professed to believe the truth should show the power of the truth in their lives and prove that they are working onward and upward from the basis of principle. They should be molding their lives and characters after the perfect model. If all could look with a discerning eye into the tremendous realities of eternity, what a horror of condemnation would seize some in the office who now pass on with seeming indifference, although separated from eternal scenes by a very small space. Many warnings have been given and urged home with intense feeling and earnest prayers, every one of which is faithfully registered in heaven to balance the account of each in the day of final investigation. The unwearying love of Christ has followed those engaged in his work in the office. God has followed those connected with the office with blessings and entreaties, yet hating the sins and unfaithfulness that cling to them as the leprosy. The deep and solemn truths that those in the office have had the privilege of listening to should take hold upon their sympathies and lead them to a high appreciation of the light God has given them. If they will walk in the light, it will beautify and ennoble their lives with heaven's own adornment, purity, and true goodness. A way is opened before everyone in the office to engage from the heart directly in the work of Christ and the salvation of souls. Christ left heaven and the bosom of his Father to come to a friendless, lost world to save those who would be saved. He exiled himself from his Father, and he exchanged the pure companionship of angels for that of fallen humanity, all polluted with sin. With grief and amazement, Christ witnesses the coldness, the indifference, and neglect with which his professed followers in the office treat the light, and the messages of warning and of love he has given them. Christ has provided the bread and water of life for all who hunger and thirst. The Lord requires all in the office to labor from high motives. Christ has, in his life, given them examples. All should labor with interest, devotion, and faith for the salvation of souls. If everyone in the office will labor with unselfish purposes, discerning the sacredness of the work, the blessing of God will rest upon them. If all had cheerfully and gladly taken up their several burdens, the wear and perplexity would not have come so heavily upon my husband. How few earnest prayers have been sent up to God in faith for those who were not fully in the truth who worked in the office. Who has felt the worth of the soul for whom Christ died? Who have been laborers in the vineyard of the Lord? I saw that angels were grieved with the trifling frivolities of the professed followers of Christ in that office, who were handling sacred things. Some have no more sense of the sacredness of the work than if they were engaged in common labor. God now calls for the fruitless cumberers of the ground to consecrate themselves to him and center their affections and hopes in him. Brother Wilbur Whitney takes matters too easy. He can bear responsibilities and will need to have them urged upon him because it is not natural for him to take them upon himself. There is no more important or greater work than that which he is now doing, if he will make it so. But Brother Wilbur is in danger of acting the boy rather than the man. If his labor is characterized with faithfulness, if he is willing to bear the burdens he can and should bear, he will be a most useful and important workman in the office. He can now be qualifying himself for usefulness, and for a businessman, a caretaker, if he will, or he can excuse himself and be content to pass along without taking care, and as a consequence, attain no special growth by his experience in the office, and will not be able to manage and lead, but submit to be led. The Lord would have all connected with that office caretakers and burden bearers. If they are pleasure seekers, if they do not practice self-denial, they are not fit for a place in the office. Brother Amidon has been too willing to take too much upon his hands when others can take a share and are better adapted to the work than himself. By taking too many things upon his hands, he becomes confused and makes blunders, which may seriously affect the work in the office. The workers at the office should feel, when they enter it, that it is a sacred place where the work of God is being done in the publication of truth which will decide the destiny of souls. This is not felt or realized as it should be. There is conversation in the typesetting department which diverts the mind from the work. The office is no place for visiting, for a courting spirit, or for amusement or selfishness. All should feel that they are doing work for God. He who sifts all motives and reads all hearts is proving and trying and sifting his people, especially those who have light and knowledge and who are engaged in his sacred work. God is a searcher of hearts and a trier of the reins, and will accept nothing less than entire devotion to the work and consecration to himself. All should have a spirit in that office to take up their daily duties as if in the presence of God. They should not be satisfied merely with doing just enough to pass along and receive their wages, but all should work in any place where they can help the most. In Brother White's absence, there are some faithful ones. There are others who are eye servants. Brother Gage was one of these. Warren does not do in his absence as in his presence. Wilbur does not do in his absence as in his presence. There are those in the office who do not feel under that restraint in the absence of my husband that they do when he is present. This is the case with several, but not with all. There is a work to be done for many in the office. Richard has belief in all the truth, and yet has not taken a decided stand for God. The influence of the young who profess Christ has stood directly in his way. Alas, the youth in Battle Creek are a set of backsliders. Yet there will be no excuse for Richard, for an unerring pattern has been given him, a faultless life. Christ is his example. Richard has seen much eye service, and as he has seen such a lack of religious principle in those who profess to believe the truth, he has stumbled upon the dark mountains of unbelief in regard to the truthfulness of the Christian religion. Richard has been faithful in his duties in the office. He has not been an eye servant. If all in the office who profess to be followers of Christ had been faithful in the performance of duty in the office, there would be a great change for the better. Young men and young women have been too much engrossed in each other's society, talking, jesting, and joking, and angels of God have been driven from the office. Marcus Lichtenstein was a God-fearing youth, but he saw so little true religious principle in those working in the office and in the church that he was perplexed, distressed, and disgusted. He stumbled over the lack of conscientiousness in some in keeping the Sabbath of the Lord, yet professing to be commandment keepers. Marcus had an exalted regard for the work in the office, but the vanity, the trifling, and the lack of principle stumbled him. God had raised up Marcus, and in his providence connected him with his work in the office. But there is so little known of the mind and will of God by some who work in the office that they looked upon this great work of the conversion of Marcus from Judaism as of no great importance. Marcus's worth was not appreciated. He was frequently pained with the deportment of Byron and of others in the office, and when he attempted to reprove them, his words were received with contempt that he should venture to instruct them. His defective language was an occasion of jest and amusement with some. Marcus felt deeply over the case of Richard, but he could not see how he could help him. Marcus never would have left that office if the young men had been true to their profession. If Marcus makes shipwreck of faith, his blood will surely be found in the skirts of the young who profess Christ, but who, in their works, in their words, and deportment, state plainly that they are not of Christ, but of the world. This deplorable state of neglect, of indifference, and unfaithfulness must cease. A thorough and permanent change must take place in the office, or those who have had so much light and so great privileges should be dismissed, and others take their place, even if they be unbelievers. It is a fearful thing to be self-deceived. Said the angel, pointing to these in the office, "Except your righteousness exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. A profession is not enough. There must be a work inwrought in the soul and carried out in the life. The love of Christ reaches to the very depths of earthly misery and woe, or it would not meet the case of the veriest sinner. It also reaches to the throne of the eternal, or man could not be lifted from his degraded condition, and our necessities would not be met, our desires would be unsatisfied. Christ has led the way from earth to heaven. He forms the connecting link between the two worlds. He brings the love and condescension of God to man, and brings man up through his merits to meet the reconciliation of God. Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. It is hard work to follow on, step by step, painfully and slowly, onward and upward, the path of purity and holiness. But Christ made ample provision to impart new vigor to every advance step, and new and divine strength is imparted at every step in the divine life. This is the knowledge and experience that the hands in the office all want and must have, or they daily bring reproach upon the cause of Christ. God calls for Brother Richard to take his stand without further delay on the side of Christ. Jesus is waiting to forgive, to love, to bless, and to give him his sheltering care. Satan has been pressing his temptations upon him with almost irresistible power, but he needs strength from above to resist these temptations and to come off victorious. The chief end of man is to glorify God, that we may enjoy him forever. How few live as if they believed this. Brother Saxby is making a mistake in his life. He puts too high an estimate upon himself. He has not commenced to build right to make a success of life. He is building at the top, but the foundation is not laid right. The foundation must be laid underground, and then the building can go up. He needs discipline and experience in the everyday duties of life, which the sciences will not give, or all his education will not give him. Physical exercise to become inured to the hardships of life. From what has been shown me, there should be a careful selection of help in that office. The young and untried and unconsecrated should not be placed there, for they are exposed to temptations and have not fixed characters. Those who have formed characters and have fixed principles and the truth of God in the heart will not be a constant source of anxiety and care, but rather helps and blessings. There are those in who should be in a place where they will have a spirit of self-sacrifice and devotion to the interest and success of the truth, to take care of those in the office in finding homes for them. And the office of publication is amply able to make arrangements to secure good helpers who have ability and principle. And the church, in their turn, should not seek to advantage themselves one penny from those who come to the office to labor and learn their trade. There are positions where some can earn more wages than those at the office, but they can never find a position more important, more honorable, or exalted than the work of God in the office. Those who labor faithfully and unselfishly will be rewarded. For them, there is a crown of glory prepared, compared with which all earthly honors and pleasures are as the small dust of the balance. Especially will those be blessed who have been faithful to God in watching over the spiritual welfare of others in the office. Pecuniary and temporal interests, in comparison with this, sinks into insignificance. In one scale is gold dust, in the other, a human soul, and such value that honor, riches, and glory have been sacrificed by the Son of God to ransom it from the bondage of sin and hopeless despair. The soul is of infinite value and demands the most attention. Every man who fears God in that office should put away childish and vain things and stand erect with true moral courage in the dignity of his manhood, shunning low familiarity, yet binding heart to heart in the bond of Christian interest and love. Hearts yearn for sympathy and love, and are as much refreshed and strengthened by them as flowers are by showers and sunshine. Brother Amidon was connected with the work of God in the office years ago. He was deficient in many respects, yet his interest and heart have been in the work. He has been devoted to the work and labored hard and unselfishly. He has had the fear of God before him and has worked to the best of his ability. Yet he is not now as well qualified to bear responsibilities in the work as he was years ago. The enemy has worked through Sister Amidon, and her influence has been such that it has worn upon her husband until he is almost unfitted for the work. Brother Amidon is a one-idea man. He cannot take in many things at a time. He has not powers of discrimination. He does not take a course which commands respect of the hands in the office. George is not qualified for the responsible position he occupies. But as there has not yet been a man raised up for the place, it has seemed necessary for him to work in the department he has. The position George now occupies should be filled by one of experience, who has a well-organized mind that can see the many things requiring attention at a glance, and who is not easily confused. One who is unselfish and discriminating, courteous, kind, yet firm and decided to carry out the regulations of the office. The care and responsibilities that George now bears are wearing his mind, for he is not adapted to the work. It would be far better for George to take some position where he has not to direct or have the charge of others. I was shown that things in the office are not as God would have them. Brother Amidon has too much to do. His mind is called in too many directions. His care should be divided with others. Brother Batchelor and Brother Amidon are not united as two laborers should be in the office. Brother Batchelor has had, during his life, a selfish temperament, and he has deprived himself of many precious blessings which he would have realized from God if he had been less self-caring. Brother Amidon was not the one to correct this. He has felt that he must make Brother Batchelor feel his selfishness, and Brother and Sister Amidon have been too zealous in making prominent Brother Batchelor's deficiency in this respect, and have pressed him because of it. This has wounded Brother Batchelor and his wife, and there has been an ugly sore festering a long time. The watching and distrust and jealousy upon the part of Brother Amidon and his wife have resulted bad in the case of Brother Batchelor and his family. Brother Batchelor has, during his life, been too ready to shun burdens and responsibilities. Brother and Sister Amidon have been too ready to take them, and they have not borne them with a good grace. But the responsibilities that they have borne have too often resulted badly. Brother and Sister Amidon should not gather burdens and responsibilities, but should seek, in the fear of God, to correct their deficiencies, encourage calmness and self-control over their ardent temperaments. They should shun excitement and display. They have both sensational natures and will be inclined to have a sensational religion unless they are governed by principle instead of feeling. Brother Batchelor, there is a lack with you, a neglect of your trust. You are not as faithful of your time and labor for the interest of the association as is your duty. There is a great lack of devotion and consecration to God. You have been growing cold and careless in regard to your own salvation, and have not felt the moral obligations resting upon you to exemplify in your life the life of Christ. How have you let your light shine before the weak and before unbelievers? Has it been such that they would be convinced that you were indeed a faithful servant of the cross of Christ? You have not shown the power of living faith and divine grace in your heart and life, and your lack of consecration unfits you for the sacred work in which you are engaged. Instead of overcoming the world, the flesh, and the devil, you are being overcome. A neglect to live up to the light you have had has brought darkness and unbelief to your soul. Brother Saxby came to that office a good boy, but he was not experienced. He needed help, the very help those in the office could give him. He was a student, fresh from school, and needed to learn many things. He had started out on a wrong plan. If he had worked his way along, earning his money by his own labor to obtain an education, he would have obtained the very experience he needed. Now he is deficient in essential branches of education, without the knowledge of which he cannot make life a success. If those in the office had given the inexperienced youth sympathy instead of making sport over his high and lofty ideas, it would have been more pleasing to God. W is a conscientious young man, but he has not taken hold of life aright. He has risen above the simplicity of the work. He has thought that there was some great work for him to do, above the common duties of life, and he is in a fair way of overlooking the duties that lie directly before him. In obtaining an education, many young men are ruined because they do not take hold of the matter aright. Work and study, at intervals, would have been better for him. The trials and difficulties of a life of toil are a great advantage to the young in developing physical and mental strength. Physical and mental powers should both be exercised, for both were designed for use. In acquiring a knowledge of science, some have neglected physical exertion, and their energies have been crippled accordingly. They ever have a defective experience as far as practical life is concerned. This class are not inclined to love labor. Those who shrink from these burdens cannot make life a success. Earnest effort, perseverance, and a constant resisting of temptation will bring the victory. Study and work and work and study will keep in active exercise both the physical and mental. These two, rightly conducted, will not war against each other. There will be great danger, in obtaining an education, of neglecting a life of devotion and prayer. The Bible should be read every day. A life of religion and devotion to God is the best shield for the young who are exposed to temptation in their associations in acquiring an education. The Word of God will give the correct standard of right and wrong and of moral principle. Fixed principles of truth are the only safeguard for youth. Strong purposes and a resolute will close many an open door to temptation and to influences unfavorable to the maintenance of Christian character. A weak, irresolute spirit, indulged in boyhood and youth, will make a life of constant struggle and of toil because decision and firm principle are wanting. Such will ever be trammeled in making a success of life in this world, and they will be in danger of losing the better life. It will be safe to be earnest for the right. The first consideration should be to honor God, and second, faithful to humanity, performing the duties which each day brings, meeting its trials and bearing its burdens with firmness and a resolute heart. Earnest and untiring effort, united with strong purpose, trusting wholly in God, will help in every emergency, and qualify for a useful life in this world, and give a fitness for the immortal life.